Good morning, Rabosai. Boker Tov. Thank you for joining our Shulchan Aruch Evan HaEzer Shir. This morning's Shaila, we're going to hopefully talk about two topics. The first topic is a little bit uncomfortable, I guess. It's the Shaila of chemical castration. Now, if you look in the news, you will find that certain human predators who prey on children, pedophiles, and other people who are... serial rapists are often offered a plea bargain or a deal with the judge to minimize their jail time if they're willing to subject themselves to a chemical castration. What is chemical castration? Chemical castration does not sound like the words say. It's an injection that is, I don't know, probably monthly or something like that, that reduces a person's libido and therefore makes them less of a potential predator for whoever they have a very strong ties for, children, whatever else it is. And therefore, judges want to lessen the danger of this person in the streets. So therefore, the judges might sometimes legislate or offer the person the option of having a less jail time if they get chemical castration. The question is, let's say you have not a pedophile, but a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham who wants to learn and not be encumbered or not be hindered by anything that will distract him from learning. So would somebody, again, be permitted, somebody, let's say a Talmud Chacham, be permitted to undergo such an injection or a series of injections, a monthly injection, to minimize their libido and therefore be able to enhance their focus on their learning? That's the topic that we're going to talk about today. And it's actually in the heels of the conversation that we had in the Shulchan Aruch last week. Last week we spoke about, in the Shulchan Aruch, drinking a koshel ikarin, which was drinking something kind of medical potion or medicine that will make a person not be able to have children. And this is a subset of that. So we finished the Shulchan Aruch last week as far as what, you know, that a woman, mikra hadin, a man is not allowed to take that medication. A woman, mikra hadin, is allowed to have that medication. We spoke about last week that if a woman is married, she might have to get rishus from her husband, or she doesn't necessarily have the right to make her husband be unable to bear children. But if she herself wants to not bear children, for example, she's a pnuya, and she's not going to mutilate anything physically only by taking medications, that we saw last week would be mutter. So now we're going to the question of what about a man not doing something that will make him unable to bear children, but will just minimize the libido and make him less distracted from anything like that. So for this, we're going to turn to a Gemara Yevamos, Samach Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara says how important it is to attempt to bear children. Tanya Rabbi Lazar Omer, Kol mi she'en osik b'pri v'rivya ki'ilu shofech damim. Now, out of sensitivity to those people who have challenges with fertility, I think there's a fabulous diak. The Gemara doesn't say Kol she'eno pore v'rove or para v'rova. It doesn't mean say somebody who doesn't have children. It says somebody who's not even trying to have children. Somebody who doesn't try to have children, there are many people who have fertility challenges, men, women, or couples. It could be any one of those three possibilities. It could be the man's issue, it could be the woman's issue, it could be the interaction between the man and the woman that could be a cause of infertility. But any person who doesn't try in their best interest to fulfill peruvu, ki'ilu shofech damim. So the Rabbi Eliezer is turning what is presumably an assay into something that's considered, first of all, striking because it's Shvichas Damim is a terrifying thing. Welcome, Mr. Bergman from Yerushalayim. Good to have you. But not only is it making it striking as a Shvichas Damim, as a terrible thing, it also is giving it a component of a lav. As the Pasuk says, Shneamar, the Pasuk in Bereishis, Shofech Dam HaAdam BaAdam Damo Yishafech, talks about Shvichas Damim, Uchsiv BaAsrei BaAtem Puruvu. Meaning the Torah contrasts. Puruvu is the opposite of Shvichas Damim. So if you're involved with Puruvu, that's not being Shofech Damim. If you're not involved with Puruvu, that's equivalent to being Shofech Damim. And now, in the irony of the irony, in the Talmudic humor that the Gemara sometimes does, Ben Azai, who's famous for something else, as we'll see in a moment, adds the following. Not only is he a Shofech Damim, But ki'ilu shofich damim umimayit ha-dmus. He lessens whatever the word dmus means. There's some Kabbalistic concept called dmus, or maybe it means tzel melokim, the ability to procreate, create. Shnemar va'atem pruvu, whatever he's trying to say that it's even worse than just shvichus dam. It's shvichus dam, and it's fundamentally antithetical to the human existence, and our and the human job in this world. We are not fulfilling if a person doesn't try to have children. That's what Ben Azai said. And now the joke is, Ben Azai, this is a great line. If you ever want to insult somebody who's inconsistent, this is what you should tell them. Yesh naya doresh unaya mekayim. Yesh naya mekayim ve'ein naya doresh. Vata naya doresh ve'ein naya mekayim. That's a nice way of saying, you are a hypocrite. There's some people who say nice things and do nice things. They're tzaddikim, they tell other people to do good things, they themselves do good things. Naya mekayim, there's some people who do good things, but they don't talk, they don't encourage other people to do things. But you're the worst. You talk high, you tell everybody else to do good things, but you yourself don't stand by your words. In other words,
there is an adage, those who don't play the game shouldn't make the rules.
Something like that, that's right. Those who talk the talk should walk the walk. Exactly. So here, Ben Azai, we know, was somebody who decided that he didn't want to get married. He was so in love with Torah, as we'll see in a moment. He said, I don't want to get married. I don't want to have children. So here he's saying, he's the one who's telling us that if you don't have children, if you don't try to have children at least, you're shofich damim, emayin hadmus, terrible things if you don't try to have children. And here Ben Azai himself is the one who said, I don't want to have children. He didn't want to get married. Amalhem Ben Azai says, I can't help it. Umayin says, shenavshi choshko b'torah. My love for Torah is so absolute and intense and I can't allow anything to take away from my love for Torah. And Efshar La'olam, she is Kamayadeh Acherim. I'll have to leave procreation to the rest of humanity. I can't get involved in that because my love for Torah and my focus on Torah, why I want it to be so intense, I have no time for a wife. I have no time for children. I have no time for anything else. But Torah, Nafshi Chakushko B'Torah, it's almost, the Lashon of the Gemara is almost, Ma'eh says, sounds like he's an onus. It's like, I can't help it. I'm so lovesick for Torah. I don't have any room to be in love with anybody or anything else.
In all fairness, he did try. He got married for a day.
That is one opinion. Regarding Rabbi Akiva's daughter. Yes, there's one opinion like that. There's machlokas about that point. If Ben Azai actually did get married, or maybe he didn't. Did he only do erusin? Maybe he didn't do nisuin. Either way, he certainly didn't commit a significant part of his life to marriage or having children. So the Gemara, criticizes him, Chazal criticizes him, and then, but he seems to have the last word and says, I can't help it. I love Torah too much. So now there's a fabulous Ritva. The Ritva says, do we paskin? That could somebody talk? Could I have a guy in yeshiva who taka says, I just love learning so much, and I want to focus on my learning so much. I just don't want to date. I don't want to date. And it's not like I want to wait till I'm 24 or 25 or 26. I don't want to get married. I'm learning so much. I'm loving my learning. I don't want to have any distractions.
In yeshiva, we had the ultra bachurim who weren't married yet. They called it the Ben Azai Club.
Uh-huh. But that wasn't because they didn't want it. That's just because they couldn't find the right person,
right?
Or they're a little weird and nobody wanted to marry them. That wasn't because, but yes, the Ben Azai Club. Okay, we don't wish that on anyone. But could a person indeed, is this an option in halacha? Is Ben Azai really an option? Zok the Ritva, he quotes the Rambam. Pasuk HaRambam zal, de, hu hadin? I guess so. Hu hadin or harehu? De potem mi priya verivya kol shechoshka nafsha batorah ke Ben Azai. V'she'en olav shum hirher. If a person could be confident, if a man could be confident about himself that he will not have any hirhurim, he won't have any distractions, and he indeed has this nachashka nafsha b'Torah, then, says the Ram, you could join the Ben Azai Club. You just apply and say, there are 2 points. You say, I'm a full-time learner, and that's all I want to do. I want to learn and do nothing else but learn. And secondly, I don't have hirhurim, and a person could be accepted to the Ben Azai Club. Aval Tosis says, come on, get real. You think we have people like that, Bizman Azai? Aval Batosis Kasa She'im B'Doras Halalu. We don't have anyone in the level of Ben Azai in his level of commitment. We don't have anybody like Ben Azai in this regard, that a person could be so certain, confident about himself, that his intensity, his asmada for Torah is so absolute, and his purity is so absolute that he could guarantee that he won't have Hirhurei Isser. That's impossible, Bizman Hazeh, and therefore Tosis argues on the Rambam and says we do not allow a Ben Azai club in today's day and age. So it's machlokas Rambam and Tosis whether or not there is this option for somebody who's so dedicated to Torah to choose the Ben Azai approach of not getting married. Ad Kan, point number one. Now let's get to our issue. Continues the Ritva and says discusses our question. Could a person get a monthly injection at the doctor, a chemical castration, that will decrease their libido and help them focus on their learning better? Says the Ritva, V'asir la'adam lishtos shum davar she'ya'akrehu k'dei la'asok b'Torah. You're not allowed to take a sterilizing. You're not allowed to take a male pill or something that would preclude the production of zera or something like that. So a person can't sterilize themselves even with a medication that we know. Men are not allowed to do that. Ava, look at this last line. Levato mimeno taiva vehirher shari. It is permitted. And what's the next word? Ve'arich. What does that mean? It is permitted and? What does v'arich mean? Berish, you know what that means? V'arich means proper. It is permitted and it's proper. Believe it or not, Rabosai, the Ritva says that if a person wants to take a medication that will decrease the libido and therefore take away their hirhurim and help them focus on their learning, it is not only permitted, but it is mutter, and it is not only mutter, but it is proper. But let's just see a little bit of a permutation to that, a little bit of a clarification of that actually. Who's Rabbeinu HaGadol of the Ritva? Who knows the history? Yossi, who's the Rabbeinu HaGadol of the Ritva?
The Rashba, I think.
He went under the Rashba. Yeah, I thought it was the Ramban. Could be. I think both the Rashba and the Ritva were Talmidim of the Ramban, I thought. Maybe you're right. Could be either the Rashba or the Ramban. She'im kiyem mitzvahs priya v'rivya. Somebody, again, given that a man was mekayim pruvu already, v'choshka nashko batora legamrei, v'rotza lishtos alechol davar shel ikur, kadei shelo yisbalto mitoraso. Let's say a person already fulfilled pruvu, and now he wants to sterilize himself with some kind of medication, with a pill, a male pill. That would be mutter, he says, which is more than what we saw before. Before he said, the Ritva himself, he just wants to do something to decrease the taiva, that's mutter. Now he's saying that if a person wants to take a sterilizing pill, again, not anything that's surgical, that would be aser, of course. And also, this is only after he fulfilled Puruvu. And, of course, it's only because he doesn't want to be in a spot from if he has 7 children, he's going to have to do homework with 7 kids. One, he had 1 boy, 1 girl, that's enough. He's, you know, and more than that, he wants to spend all of his time learning. That should be mutter, he says. Because he says, because the whole issue of taking a pill is only an issue of Drabanan, and if it's for the purpose of Torasa, purpose of Shalom Levatel Torah, it would be mutter. And I heard of Gedolim who did this. That means that they were Gedolim, the Ramban is saying, that in order for them to, once they had a boy and a girl, they were fulfilled the mitzvah purvu, they actually did take some kind of medications to sterilize themselves so that they could be completely focused on their Torah. Oh, what about the mitzvah of having more children in their elder years? That's what he means in this last line. That's only the Rabbanan. And for this situation, for a person who's so incredibly dedicated to his learning, there's room to suspend the mitzvah of La'erev al Tanach Yadech, of having more children as a person gets older, once they're ready for full Purvu, in order to be able to learn with the incredible hasmada that this unique individual is able and capable of doing.
How could you say Le'erev al Tainich Kedecha is Drabanan? It's a pasuk. Is it more of an Asmachta?
It's a pasuk in Yeshaya, I believe, no?
So it's Divrei Sofrim?
Yes, that's Drabanan.
What about
the Ainah?
So the Ona is not being impacted, because here we're talking about he's be able to provide, he's able to be with his wife, but he took this pill to sterilize himself. Maybe she's taking the pill too.
Does he need?
We learned last week that she could take permission. The pill. What's that, Mr. Smart?
Does he need his wife's permission to take
that? Excellent question. That's a great question, because last week we saw that the Chasam Sofer said that a woman would need her husband's permission, because a man has a mitzvah. Here, does he need his wife's permission? Meaning, that's a good question. Is a man mishubed to be able to enable his wife to have children? I don't know what the halacha would say, but from a practical rabbinic purpose, I would say definitely yes. From a halachic perspective, I don't know what I would say.
Isn't a man chayv an onah to give his wife that type of attention?
A man is required to give his wife emotional attention and the physical attention, but to give her the... he could do that even if he's sterilized, even if he's not able to bear children, or his zera is not effective, or he doesn't have zera in his ejaculate. He still is able to fulfill to do ona.
So if I'm reading medicine, they taste it. What happened? One would just sterilize it, but not take away his libido.
If it lessens the libido, it sounds like that could still, if he, again, a person has to do for the mitzvah of ona, is regardless of a person has very low libido, still has a chiyuv of ona, he still has to be there for his wife. Even if he's not interested, he's mechuyuv to. So sometimes I get up for shachris even though I don't like getting out of bed. I do it because I have to. So a person could fulfill the mitzvah of ona, not because he's on fire, not because he's a tremendous Baal Taiva or his Taivas are grabbing him and he's ready to roar, but because he has a chayav to, and he'll do what he has to do. Like many other mitzvahs that people do because they have to do it, even if they're not so excited about it. Okay. That is the first section of today's shir. So we've come out with something fascinating, that chemical castration, again, to minimize a person's libido in such a situation, if it's for the purpose of focus on Torah for those great, unique, that again, we're not talking about, Joe Schmo, who sits next to you in shul, we're talking about the greatest of the great. Someone like that might have the right to make such a choice to minimize the libido, and even after, here we're saying, even after proof was fulfilled, to even sterilize themselves medically. Okay, now we're going to talk about the next seif. The next seif is talking about back. We finished the medical and the chemical stuff. Now we're going to go back to serus of animals, real castration to animals, but you'll see also to humans, but doing it in an indirect way. So let's see the Rambam, and we'll get to the Shulchan Aruch shortly. So we're now going to start the next sif. Zok the Rambam Hilchos Yisurei Bia. Hamashke Ikarin. Somebody who gives to drink something that would sterilize, La'adam, Olish Arminim, Kedei L'Sarsa, whether to a human being or you feeding sterilizing material, medications to either a human or an animal, hareza aser, it's aser of ein lok and alav. We don't know if that means it's aser d'rabbanan or it's aser d'araisa, we're not sure. However, an isha, as we pointed out last week, an isha is okay. Isha muteris lishtos ikar and kadeh l'sarsa, kadeh shel tailor, a woman is allowed to take this kind of medication. Okay, that's that material we learned already. Hare, now, what about something a little bit more gruesome? Let's say we tie a person down, and we, again, I apologize for the gruesomeness, and we sick a dog at them, or some other animal. And we somehow direct the dog to their genitals of this person that we tied down, to mutilate their genitals and therefore sterilize them. And you, say, go sick him, Fido, sick him. Or another, terrible torture. You sit a person b'mayim. You sit a person in freezing water, o b'sheleg. Ad shebitel mimeno evari tashmish. Until his you sat a person in freezing water or in snow long enough that their genitalia were either impacted or fall off or something. So,
Rabbi, that was a thing. There was something called Tshuvat HaMishkal, brought down in the Tshuvas. Tshuvat HaMishkal, the Nodi Yehuda talks about that.
He talks
about... Someone said, the Tshuvas HaMishkal, yeah.
That's talking about, you know, rolling in the snow for a few minutes, not to the point, not to sit there for hours to the point that a part of your body falls off, no?
I don't know how long, but there was such a thing where you go into the snow because you were over a
you want to be very uncomfortable. You know what it's like? Nowadays it's the equivalent of taking a freezing shower. If I said, you know, you have to do tshuva, so you're too much of a Baal Taiva, so go into a freezing shower for 15 minutes. It's freezing. It's absolutely freezing. You know what? Okay, for tshuva you do that. I don't think it's to the point of being mevatel mimeno evari hatashmish. That would be an issue. That would be an issue. Right, but I don't think the Niskalgel B'Shalig is as long as to is long enough
no,
to.
Right.
So if somebody would do this, if you would tie someone down in the snow, in the ice, in the freezing cold, until this would happen, so you're only a goreim, right? You didn't actually mutilate somebody with your hands, in which you would get malchus. The surgeon who would castrate maybe would get malchus, but you just caused somebody that it should happen to them. So then, eno loka, actually, sorry, it's biyato. Until you're the surgeon, you have a knife in your hand, then you'll get malchus. However, somebody who does this terrible thing to another human being, roi la hakosa malchus mal, you should beat him up. Somebody who's terrible like this and does such terrible things, you could beat him up. But that would be midrabana, not malchus, midaraisa. Okay. Now, where does the Rambam get the second half of halacha from? Says the Rambam says that if you cause somebody, again, you sicked an animal or a snake or something on a person to mutilate him, you don't get malchus, but it's us. Where does the Rambam get that from? Is there any Gemara? There's no Gemara that talks about that. Says the Magen Mishnah, I know where the Rambam got it from. The Rambam gets it from a Mishnah in Sanhedrin. And the Mishnah there here we go. Let's look at this Mishnah. This Mishnah is not talking about castration, it's not talking about sirus, it's not talking about neutering, spaying, anything of that sort. It's talking about murder. How do you do murder? Well, don't do it. But if you did it, then you're a rotzech, right? This is the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that talks about who gets capital punishment, who gets hereg, and yanshe yerni dachas. Now let's talk about some of the halachas of a rotzeach. Okay, let's take a little detour to get into the sugya of a rotzeach. Rotzeach, sheikas re'eu be'even or be'barzel. Okay, you take a baseball bat, you swing a rocket, you throw a rock at them. Okay, that's rotzeach. Now look, v'kovash alav l'soch hamayim. You drown somebody. You stick their head in a pool of water long enough that they die. Oh, the sochaur, you throw them into a fire. Veinu yachal alos misham. You throw them into a fiery pit. So that's called murder. V'chayev yirchayev, the death penalty because you're a murderer. Ah, now look at the next. Doch v'lesoch hamayim alosochaur v'yachal alos misham. Let's say you threw a guy off the dock into the river. Yeah, but he could get out of the river. Or you threw a guy into a burning building, but he could get out of the burning building. V'meis, but the person, Rachman Aslan, died. That's, we're not going to honor you at the shul dinner, but you're not a murderer. You're a murderer, but you're not going to carry the capital punishment, putter. Now let's look at the last line, because this is what's relating to us. Let's say you are walking your dog, and you happen to have those very powerful, dangerous dogs?
Pitbull.
In Washington Heights, there are so many pit bulls. It's frightening. You walk the streets, I'm always scared. Walking in Washington Heights, there's so many pit bulls that people walk around with. Anyway, whenever I see a pit bull, I always try to, you know, here around here, not so many people. Even the people in the neighborhood who have dogs, they're not pit bulls. In Washington Heights, you know, the dog of choice is a pit bull. So when I go to yeshiva, I regularly see them. Shisa by Sakalev, you sick a dog on somebody and the dog kills a person. Shisubayas hanachash, you entice, what do you call those snake charmers, right?
Charm.
You charm a snake to attack somebody and thereby kill the person. also pater. That's not considered a direct act of ritzicha. Of course, you shouldn't sick your pit bull to kill your next door neighbor. It's not your not that it's mutter, not that it's a good thing to do. But if you did it, you're not considered a rotzeach. You don't get the death penalty, but you are. It's still definitely asur to do. That's nothing to do with castration. Now, the Magen Mishnah suggests that when the Rambam saw this line, when it came to ritzicha, and when it comes to ritzicha, we see that when you sick a dog on somebody to kill them, it's not called a maisa, it's only called a, you know, it's indirect, it's not called a maisa. So the Rambam deduced that if you do the same thing to cause a castration, you sick a dog on somebody to, you know, to bite off their every tashmish, that would also not be a maisa for which you'd get malchus, but it would be a lower level, it would still be potter, aval aser. That's what the Magen Mishnah deduces, where the source of the Rambam is when the Rambam says you're not allowed to sick an animal to harm somebody's genitalia. Because there's no other place in Shas that mentions anything like it. Okay, that's the background, Rabosai. Now we're ready to jump straight into the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, Simen Hei of Evan HaEzer, Sif Yud Gimel. Hooray! Shakaf es ha'adam, you tie a person down. V'shisa bo es ha'kelev, and you sick a dog on him. O sh'ar chayos ad sh'asau kruz shafcha, until they are sufficiently injured. O sh'hishiva b'mayim, you tie a guy down in the water, o b'shelag, cold water, o shelag, ad sh'ivatim merwe vari tashmish. Now, I want to add one point. What does it mean when we say that you put somebody in water that's so cold, or snow, that shebitam imenay varitashish? Now, it is true that in Siberia, I actually knew a Jew in Flatbush who was missing part of his nose. And the story was that he was in Siberia, and it was so frigid, or maybe it was in the concentration camps, I don't remember. It was some either Russia or the war, that it was so freezing that the limbs, the external limbs, were literally frozen. You know, the blood flow was literally frozen. And if there was any kind of trauma, you know, his nose was banged, it just basically fell off because it had already been frozen. So a piece of his nose had just been fallen off. Maybe it's possible that we're talking about a situation, again, it's not going to happen in a climate like ours, but if you go to a much, much, much colder climate where it's, you know, negative, you know, 20 degrees, and you leave a person outside for, without pants on for, you know, for 3 hours, then it could be that you know, they've attached, which could literally be knocked off. Maybe it's talking about that, but maybe it's talking about something else. Maybe it's talking about this. I'm just suggesting. Maybe Dr. Jared here. I don't know if you. I don't see on my screen. Maybe on the other screen. The zera, in order to be functional, has to operate at a very specific temperature, which is why Hashem, in His incredible chachma, made the Evare HaZera, the testicles, be outside the body, so they wouldn't be too hot, because they would be inside the body, they would be a few degrees warmer, and not able to be effective. In fact, I got a shiloh about this a few months ago from somebody in the shul. There's something called varicose seal. Varicose seal is a vein that runs too close to the testicles, and therefore can raise the heat, raise the temperature because of the blood flow that's near the testicles. And if it's too hot, then again, the zera will not be effective. So the question that a person should call me with is, is he allowed to get a surgery to fix that? Not allowed to get a surgery to fix that? Not for now. But what you do see from that is that the production of effective zera is a function of a very, very, very precise temperature range. I'm wondering, maybe this Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam, is talking about a case where you put the person in cold for long enough that somehow it affected the ability to create zera, because the zera is not able to maintain that proper, that the testicles are not being kept, or the scrotum is not being kept in the proper heat framework, and that will somehow affect the effectiveness of the zera to be molded. Maybe that's what it means when the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam has the lashon of shibat shabitam imenay veritash, not that it got fell off or something like that by being kept in the water, but that the scrotum was frozen, not that something would happen mechanically, but because of the heat it was too cold, it wasn't able to produce, and something got messed up because of the temperature that it should have been kept at, maybe.
I think there's a distinction between something like a varicose seal or very tight underpants or things that can raise the temperature in that region versus over here where you, but that'll be temporary because, you know, let the guy cool off a little bit, stand in front of a fan and put on boxers and he'll be okay. But I think over here we're talking about that you're actually damaging the testicles themselves permanently. So it's not just temporarily that the temperature is off enough that it's not going to function for now. I think here it's talking basically you're going to get frostbite of the testicles. You get frostbite on a nose or like the Rav mentioned, or a toe, and the toe falls off. Here it would be the equivalent, and they're never going to function again.
Uh-huh. Okay. So if there's a severe frostbite of, let's say, for example, a person, God forbid, gets severe frostbite of their pinky. So even if their pinky doesn't fall off, they could still lose functionality in that pinky permanently?
Patients who never recover sensation in a frostbitten limb, yes.
Really? You can never recover sensation in a frostbitten limb? That's fascinating.
The nerves died.
The nerves died.
The architecture of the blood blood vessels was destroyed. And it's a stroke of the brain is that you don't get blood flow back.
Uh-huh.
A stroke of the finger is you don't get blood flow back.
Uh-huh. Fascinating. So there won't be the blood flow. And obviously without the blood flow to the scrotum, it's not going to function. Okay. Thank you. Okay, there we go. Thank you. That's from the neurologist. Tells us about the nerves, the nerve damage. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch says in these cases, that would be usher, of course, to do such a terrible thing to a fellow Jew. However, ein aloka, it doesn't get mal to do something to a fellow Jew, but not surgically, is terrible, and we're not going to honor you at the shul dinner, and we might not talk to you for a week. We might even, beat you up a little bit, but ein aloka ad shiyusaris biyada, only surgical, only with a knife, is the only way that you'll actually be chayev the malkos for this iser of sirus. But of course, Roy Lahakosa Makas Matos. Okay. Now, if you remember, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about a very cute case where the rooster who was removed from his crown, I think we called it, right? The red crown on top of the rooster that made him depressed. And because he was depressed, he wasn't interested in Tashmish. Is that the equivalent? We learned the Gemara about this. The Gemara said, what we'll see right here. The conclusion of the Gemara was that you're allowed to remove that crop from the crop. What do we call it? The crown from the rooster? Because it's not actually
the comb.
The comb. Thank you. I remember it was a C. The comb from the rooster, because you're not actually castrating them or doing anything, to their reproductive capacity. You're just making him depressed. And in that depressed state, he's not interested. He doesn't feel good about himself. Aval says, Ramah, mutu litol karbalto shaltarnagol, you could remove the comb of a rooster. Afal gav de mistayis alideze. You're not doing anything to the reproductive organs. You're just making him in a way that he's not interested. Again, the Ramah doesn't phrase it so well. When we saw it in the Gemara, yeah, the Beis Shmuel comments clarifies the way we did. What's that?
Not Tzar Balei Chaim, you're making the guy depressed.
We'll talk about Tzar Balei Chaim in the next if, not now. But hold your question. I don't know if we'll get there today, but in the next if, it actually talks about Tzar Balei Chaim and gives us some parameters. The
Beis Shmuel So then damage to the pituitary gland, which is the master gland that would then tell the testicles to do their job, that would be the equivalent of the Tarnagol's comb.
Well, I'm nervous to say that. Let's see the next Beis Shmuel, then we'll relate to your question. Says the Beis Shmuel, what's the heter here to remove the comb of the Tarnagol? Hatam de ein misari so. This is not any castration. This is not sterilizing them in any which way. Rather, rak al yedeze misabel, he becomes depressed. Al shenital hodo, his masculinity was removed. He used to feel like a strong tarnagol with a beautiful, attractive comb, and he looks like a schlepper now. Fine. Stop. What he just said is that you're not doing anything that actually sterilizes. You're just making him feel bad about himself. Now, Dr. Jarrett, you're talking about doing some kind of manipulation to the pituitary gland. That's going to make him sad and not want to have low self-esteem and not think he could get married? Or that's going to do something to the to the physical capacity, the physiological ability of the body to produce zera and whatever is necessary.
But we could go back to the frontal lobotomies. Obviously, you know, we don't do that. We don't practice that anymore. That they would do to schizophrenics, they made them just apathetic humans who didn't care about anything.
Okay,
so that might be the better analogy.
Yeah, agreed. If you would make somebody apathetic, again, I'm not saying you should do frontal lobotomies, but if you would do some kind of let's avoid a medical procedure, give somebody some kind of lithium pill to just make them, they're too hyperactive. You want to give them some kind of lithium pill to just make them slow down. And being slow makes them uninterested and apathetic about everything in life, including procreation. That seems to be mutter. Because you're not doing anything to the actual reproductive ability. So it can't be qualified as serus, as sterilization. You're just making somebody apathetic. So again, I'm not getting into the psychiatric appropriateness, and I'm not getting into what right do you have to make somebody, you know, apathetic about life, but sometimes it would be necessary based on whatever other conditions they might have. Maybe better be apathetic than suicidal, for example, or other kinds of other issues that a person might be facing. So maybe apathy is better than depression. So in such a case, we would not be concerned with the serious concern with the sterilization, because there's no sterilization happening. It's just you're making them uninterested they don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel excited about anything. That seems to be a fair comparison.
And does it have to be an all or none phenomenon? In other words, a person has zero interest, not like has interest once per year, as opposed to the normal man. I mean,
meaning if you take it from if you just lessen the interest, it sounds like that would be permitted. You're asking what happens if you do something that makes the person zero interested ever again?
Well, no. Again, I mean, for example, the most common side effect of the SSRIs, which is Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Luvox, Celexa, Lexapro, the most commonly used antidepressants, is it decreases libido. So if a normal man has an interest, let's say, 100 days out of the year, he'll have interest 50 days out of the year. I'm making up these numbers, of course. So that there's absolutely no Shiloh about. If you go from 100 to zero, that might, you know, we can at least start the discussion.
So again, I don't think it would be an issue of serus. You can't say that's serus because there's no sterilization happening. If something would, you know, if somebody, you know, he's still able to do, you know, to have a child, you know, physiologically. It's just that his interest is not present. Taking away the interest sounds like, you know, this Natila Sakar Balto, Shel Tarnagol. Sounds like that theoretically should be mutter. Again, I think, you know, Halach Lamaisa, I would have to research this more. We'd ask somebody with very broad shoulders much broader than I. But certainly in the Lamdas of the Sugya, that's what seems to emanate from the Sugya. Okay. The Beis Shmuel says one application that relates to what we're talking about and raises the following question. We know that when it comes to animals, let's say you have a pet dog and it wasn't sterilized and you know it's a female dog and you know what happens if you let it loose, it will end up becoming pregnant and you don't want to have a pregnant dog because you don't want little doggy babies, you just want this dog. So are you allowed to cover the animal's body with some kind of jacket that'll prevent it from being able to procreate? Or is that also an extension of serus? Is that an extension of sterilizing the animal? Says the Beis Shmuel explicitly, Mutter likshuras hanakeva shelo yale ala zecharim. You can tie some kind of jacket or some kind of fabric or something that would prevent the animal from being able to mate with a fellow animal, and therefore you're ultimately preventing it from procreating, but you're not manipulating its genitalia, you're not doing anything, you're not even feeding it any kind of medication to be misares it. Because remember, we saw last week that to give even a male animal, a medication that would sterilize it is prohibited, at least midrabanan. That would be prohibited, but to just, put a jacket on them that they can't wiggle out of, that would be permitted. Fine. Yossi asked, Yossi Soderblick asks, what about Tzara Bali Chaim? The Taz asks you a question explicitly, and we'll see more about Tzara Bali Chaim in the next year, but says the Taz, if you're taking off the Karbalta, right, you want to take off the rooster, you don't want it to have babies, so you want to make it a little down and depressed, and take off its comb, its masculinity, and it's not going to be interested in being in mating. Said Bepiske Maharai, that's the Chumas Hadeshen, Kosa Bezed, De'en Kam Yishum Tzara Bali Chaim, Kevin Sheesh Revach Bedover. This is a very important halacha in Tzara Bali Chaim, which we're going to talk about more about Richas in the next Se'if, where it's discussed more at length. But whenever there is a human profit, a human gain, we do not apply Tzara Bali Chaim. When do we say Tzara Bali Chaim? Tzara Bali Chaim was, as Chata'ay Ani Mazkir, do any of you remember when you were about 8 years old and you caught a daddy long legs? Woe to the daddy long legs who's caught by an 8-year-old boy. Woe to that daddy long legs. He is a daddy without long legs after that. I remember, I don't know if I ever did this, but I certainly had friends who would, you know, pull off the legs of the daddy long legs as an exciting activity when you're 8 years old and living, you know, up in camp or in the bungalow colony. That is Tzara Bali Chaim. That's a terrible, disgusting thing. And because there's no revach, there's no gain. But let's say, for example, you want to, you sell chickens. And to sell the chickens...
I want to know Tzara Bali Chaim by bugs.
By bugs, yeah, we have to get to that. I know you asked me that, I never got back to you.
Only on mammals, I think.
I have to double check. I gave Shira on this a few years ago, I never got back to you, Ramesh. I'm sorry, I know you did ask me about other fish and bugs. Let's say you have a chicken, and you want to pack them really, really, really tightly in a truck because it's much cheaper to transport them. So the animal rights activist will say, oh, how could Jews do that? It's Tzara Bali Chaim. What's the answer? The answer is whenever there's either financial gain or some benefit, we do not apply the rule of Tzara Bali Chaim. Tzara Bali Chaim is imposing pain on an animal for no good reason. For no reason that's beneficial. If you happen to want to wear leather jackets, no, that's not Tzara Bali Chaim. If you want to raise animals in a more economical and efficient way, even if it's not as pleasant a living condition, but it is more efficient and economical, we might also say, that's not subject to Tzara Bali Chaim because you're doing it for financial efficiency. So similarly here, apparently the reason why they would take off the comb of the rooster, I guess it made the roosters, I don't know exactly what they wanted to do. Anyone know why you want to make a rooster not mate? I know why. Because when the chickens lay eggs, what do you want to have? You want to have chicks? Well, if you want to have more chickens, you want them to be fertilized. If you want to have, like, when we buy eggs, we don't want to have red spots in our eggs. We don't want to have little chicks in our eggs because it will make our eggs trafe. An ephroach inside of an egg is considered a sheretz. So that's why when you check eggs for blood spots, nowadays there are no male roosters in a million miles from the egg farms. For this reason, because the egg farms don't want you to ever open up an egg and find an embryo. You'll never buy eggs again in your life if you found an embryo inside an egg. Worst, a blood spot, but those really are not really real blood spots anymore anyway. So therefore, a person who has a chicken farm, an egg farm, who wants to raise eggs to sell eggs, you know, a dozen of eggs, not for hatching, but wants to sell eggs, he doesn't want roosters to fertilize his chickens. He wants to, if he's going to have a rooster, he's going to take off that karbalto, the comb, to make it not uninterested in mating with the chickens. And therefore, it won't fertilize the chickens. So therefore, maybe that's why he did it, I would assume. Okay, that's the end of Sif Yud Gimel. The next Sif is the last Sif of the Simen and the most important, because it's the most practical. And that is, it's clear that I'm not going to neuter my cat or my dog. I'm not going to spay it. I'm not going to become a veterinarian who has to do that for a living either, because that would be an issa d'oraisa. Certainly to a male, to a female, at least an issa d'rabbanan, to physically mutilate. However, there's a wonderful veterinary hospital just down the road, and it's owned by somebody named Dr. Mick Christopher. Christopher Mick something or other. And he is definitely a Gentile by all shitos. The question is, could I bring my favorite poodle, or my favorite cat, or my favorite hamster to this veterinarian, and he'll do the cirrus? What we're really asking, if we want to unpackage this shaila, is a very universal shaila, and that is, does the Isser Dirabanan of Amira Lenachri apply only by Hilchus Shabbos or by all Isurim in the Torah? In other words, if there's an Isser to neuter, if there's an Isser to sterilize an animal surgically, surgically, so could you tell a guy to do it? If there's an Isser to, what else is Isser to do? You're not allowed to work your field during Shemitah, right? Could you ask a guy to work your field? I'm not talking about Heter Mechir, which is you sell the land to a guy. That's a different story. You have a field. Could you ask a guy to work your land? If you have a, what's another example of Hilchus Amir Lenachri, not Shabbos? You're not allowed to plant.
You have a restaurant. Can you ask him to cook possible challah?
Yeah, you have a restaurant. Well, there you're getting hana. That wouldn't be a good example because there you're getting hana.
A haircut with a razor.
What?
A haircut with a razor.
That's complicated because you're the nikaf.
Nikaf, yeah.
Yeah. So you see, it's not so easy to find these cases. Let's say you're not allowed to plant kilayim. Are you allowed to ask a guy to plant kilayim you?
The classic one is cutting down a fruit-bearing tree.
Yes, that's right. Dark. Could you ask a guy to cut a fruit tree? That's correct. If you have fruit trees and it's a deraisa to cut down a fruit tree of Baltasha, so you're allowed to ask a guy to cut down a fruit tree. Correct. So this is the shy that we have to ask ourselves.
It's very analogous because you're also stopping reproduction.
Right, in a very different way. So I don't want to, use that analogy. I'll leave it as not analogous because it's very different. Okay, so should we start this? Maybe let's stop here. And next week, we'll try to do it as a unit. It will be a full unit. We'll stop here. I know it's a little bit early, but I think it's better to stop this at this point. We'll do next week a full unit from begin to end just on that topic. Okay? So thank you, Rabbi Osai. Thank you for joining us.